The next presentation is a result of some of the discussions around the road check that occurred not too long ago, and so we've got two of the Regional Conservation Officer Supervisors, Craig Haas and Jeremy Rowe, to give a presentation on that. And we'll turn it over to them and let them present to you some of the findings and some of the other work when it comes to that type of activities.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, Secretary Hepler. Craig Haas, Regional Conservation Officer Supervisor out of Watertown. And Jeremy Rowe, the Regional CO Supervisor out of Sioux Falls, is giving you a supplemental handout, some stuff that we're not going to go over today directly, but encourage you to look through it. If you have any questions, there's a couple operational plans in there. We've attached our contact business cards. If you ever have questions, call us direct. We're more than happy to answer questions. And down the road, if you want to see firsthand any of our operations, we've got an invite for you. So we'd like to get you guys exposed to those details. So today we're going to do just an overview of kind of our road checks and procedures. Kind of go over some of the planning, the why and when we do them, and basically just a general overview. And we're going to start out with the statutory authority. One of the questions we get frequently when we have road checks is, are they constitutional? Is it legal to do it? And there are several state laws which I've attached in your handout. We're not going to go through them specifically, but they're all there. State law does establish law enforcement to use temporary roadblocks. Consistently, we've used them. It'd be the same laws that apply to Highway Patrol when they do DUI checkpoints. So that establishes the authority for us to do a temporary roadblock, which a road check would fit into. And then we also have two specific statutes for game. 41-15-6 allows for the inspection of game, so that says if you have game or fish, you have to allow an inspection if you have game. It allows us to stop vehicles for that activity. And 41-15-7 is the penalty for that, so if you have game or fish and you refuse inspection, that's a violation not to allow an inspection. So they are covered under statute, and I don't know that they've ever been contested in our state, but it's held up. One thing that did change our game a little bit was we used to do a fake road check where you'd have a sign that said road check ahead, but there really wasn't a road check, but there'd be like a minimum maintenance road that turned off of that. And so we could do it with less people because you just have two people at the end of those roads around the corner, and anybody that turned off on a minimum maintenance road going down a highway was generally trying to divert from the road check. Consistently, 100% of the people that we contacted were in violation. And that is one that was ruled not constitutional, so we don't do those anymore. There has to be a road check ahead for somebody to avoid a road check. And our pretense for the stop was for avoiding a road check, and so we don't do those anymore. For the purpose of road check, why we do them, road checks are a law enforcement tool that we've used for decades in game, fish, and parks. I've been on for 25 years. I'm sure we did for 20 years before that. So it is a tool that we do use quite often. In the state, we probably, between the four regions, we run a handful of year. Every region does one or two a year, typically. And we'll kind of get into the why we do them and why we don't do them, because there are some pros and cons. But road checks generally plan to target a specific hunting or fishing activity as a means to enhance or encourage hunter or angler compliance. So some examples of when and where we do that is if you have a hot fish bite. An example of that would be, I think it was 2 years ago, we had the river was really, really good for fishing. It was Memorial Day weekend, it was in the spring. So we partnered up with Region 2 because they do take a lot of manpower. And we had a road check on Highway 12 at Bowdle. And on Memorial Day weekend, so we had a hot fish bite. We have a main travel corridor, Highway 12. We can generate a lot of stops and very productive. So that's just an example of when and where we'd do one. Other examples are deer antelope season, short seasons, opening weekends, middle of the week, targeting times when a lot of people are on the road head home. Peak pheasant hunting. Opening weekend is a lot of times it's tough to do road checks on opening weekend of very substantial ones just because of the manpower they take. You think of pheasant season, we were getting trespass complaints, 660 complaints, generally high volume calls. And it's hard to tie up a lot of officers at a road check when they're getting so many calls. So opening weekends, we'll do smaller ones, but generally not a higher major road. Something we have done is on like the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday after the opener. So we have people that have come in for extended hunt and then doing it later in the week as those guys are traveling home. Peak waterfall migration, and part of the, so the big thing we want to target is we want to do the most bang for our buck. We want to, when most of the people are hunting and high volumes of people, so you want to try to guess those peak times. Well, this year, and we're planning these in like September, so it's hard to gauge what your migration is going to be like. This year, when we're planning our summit one, that okay, we got middle of November is a, you know, generally peak of waterfall. We have Veterans Day, which falls on a Monday, so people are going to be doing extended hunts, maybe traveling on the Monday as a holiday, utilizing that holiday, and so that's why we planned one for that. Season openers, again, we'll do them on season openers. Sometimes those are smaller in nature, just so we're tying up fewer guys. But another one is like antelope season. Most of that occurs in Region 1. Region 2 may have a road check specifically for antelope because they don't have as many officers tied up with antelope season. So big thing is we're trying to target those high volumes and peak where we got lots of users in the field.
Good morning. Jeremy Rowe, I'm the regional CO supervisor out of Sioux Falls. And today I'm just gonna go over a little bit of the planning process with you guys on how we start the planning process and all the way through to a road check. We get a lot of questions of why we don't run more road checks, all the way from people that work for us, all the way from hunters, you know, that are, when they see some of our statistics or whatnot. And so I'll kind of go through that. It's not as easy as, hey, let's grab some signs and go set up on the road and stop every vehicle that comes through, because it's just not feasible. So some of those things that we'll start with, as Craig said, you know, our district CO supervisors will sit down with their teams, you know, around August, and they'll start putting together some recommendations of what they want to do for the fall seasons. And they bring them recommendations to Craig and I, and we'll sit down and go through them with them and see kind of what's feasible. And a lot of the times they all want to do road checks. So as they bring that road check, some things that we'll start to consider, you know, is the time management, you know, is it going to be feasible? Is it something that we want to do? Is it a need or is it a want? Time of year, as Craig said, you know, we always got to take that into consideration. If we run them on pheasant openers, our guys are crazy busy, you know, that time of year. So personnel, and then obviously safety is another big one that we always look at. We'll go out and we'll do site visits and make sure that, you know, if it's a four-lane or a two-lane highway, is it going to be safe to actually run it there? And then obviously budget, and then compliance needs. If we're getting a lot of tip calls in the area for different things, you know, then we might want to try to run one the next year if we're seeing a high violation rates in certain counties or transportation laws being broke, then, you know, we'll start looking for those specific spots. So a little bit of planning continued. As the district conservation officer supervisor, as we kind of give them the go-ahead that we're going to go ahead and run the road check this fall, they'll start to come up with an operation plan, and that's what Craig and I, we have attached there. You guys can look through that. Basically, an operation plan, what it is kind of the nuts and the bolts of everything that's going to go on. So anybody that shows up to the operation, whether you're law enforcement or non-law or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or anything, you can look at that plan and you're going to know exactly what's going to go on. Everything from what the officers on the road are going to say all the way to equipment needs, all the way to where the nearest hospital is. So we try to put everything we can possibly think of into that plan, and that also will go to our state's attorneys and everything for support as well. As I can see on there, you know, our next step is we do meet with state's attorneys in every area before we do a road check, just to get their support and make sure that they're on board with everything. And then we'll go out and we'll do that in safety inspection right after that. We'll have, you know, we usually try to run them where there's a DOT parking lot. That seems like those are kind of the most successful because it's safety to get off and get them off the road and not have people doing checks and officers right on that highway. So that's kind of where we usually try to focus those at. As you can see, the next thing that we'll do is we'll go meet with DOT, and then they have a right to occupy permit that we have to fill out. And basically what that is, it obviously gives us the right to occupy, but then if it's a four-lane highway, you still just can't put out cones anywhere you want to. It's got to be specific. If it's a 65 mile an hour, they got to have a certain amount of distance before they come to a stop. So we get all that done with DOT, and then they give us a plan of where we need to place all of our signs and where our road check signs are and everything. So one other outside entity that we use a lot in Region 3 down in Sioux Falls is Dakota Traffic Solutions. So basically, I mean, it costs money to hire them to come and do it, but they take all that burden on and then all that liability as well. So they will go and work with DOT, get the permit, and they come out. We say we want to start at 1 o'clock. They turn the sign on at 1 o'clock. We're done at 8 o'clock, and they tear everything down. So we kind of keep all officers off the road. So that's another thing that we do, but that is obviously, you know, pricey in a lot of ways too. So some of our bigger ones, we'll hire that out and have them do that. We do coordinate with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and other outside law enforcement agencies, Highway Patrol, state's attorneys will come out and they'll be part of our plan. The sheriff's office, we work with them a lot. So after all that's said and done, then we can finally say, all right, let's go ahead and conduct the road check.
And so when we're getting to the road check, many of our hunting and seasons and bag limits are based on species sex-specific regulations. Road checks, we typically find transportation violations that we don't normally find during field compliance checks. So when we're checking hunters in the field on a normal contact, usually we'll check a license, look at birds, other, you know, if we're checking waterfall plugs, that sort of thing. But in the field, it's very rare to find an overbag. People just don't have an over limit with them. In the Northeast, is for fishing especially, it's very common for guys to go out fishing in the morning, catch a limit, go back to wherever they're staying, clean their fish. And you look at, you know, June, July, there's a lot of daylight left after 10 o'clock in the morning. And those guys will go back out in the evening and catch more fish. And for detection purposes, it's very hard to find those folks because they might get checked in the morning, but, you know, 12 hours later, if they do get checked again, it's somebody else that's going to be checking them. So they won't know what they had in the morning. A lot of times they may not have all the fish with them at the time. So those overbags are very tough to detect in the field. The other thing we see is the transportation violations. So rested out pheasants and waterfall. If you check somebody in a field pheasant hunting, if they do have a hen and kept it, obviously they're not going to keep that with their bag limit. They're going to show you that's going to be hidden away somewhere. They go back to the motel room, they clean the birds. If they breast it out, you can't tell the difference between a hen and a rooster. Same with waterfall, very species and sex specific regulations. When you have breasted out ducks, you can't tell what they are. So we do have a lot of rules that follow that. And typically those are one of our higher violations that we find at road checks is breasted out waterfall, breasted out pheasants. There's no plumage or sex ID on them. Other ones are with deer, boned out meat with no tag, no sex or species with an antlerless whitetail tag. They have to maintain that all the way through till they get to their house. Frozen blocks of fish on our fish checks, that's probably our highest violation. They'll come in a gallon Ziploc bag of fish and water that's frozen in a big block. And when you look at that, you have no idea what's inside that bag. So that's probably our highest violation that we find during fishing checks. And then the overbags. We check guys in the field, we don't find them. After they've been here for 4 or 5 days and they're going home, that's when we find the majority of our over limit violations. And this is a schematic of our Summit road check, the one we had. This one will be in your handouts. Just a little bit of a easier pointer on that. So this is the Summit road check. So this is a four lane divided highway, 70 mile an hour zone. So this is our point of stop. Our signage actually starts a couple miles up the road, so letting people know that there's something ahead, slowing people down. We'll have a vehicle up here somewhere, a law enforcement vehicle waiting, and he's watching for people that are turning around, avoiding the road check, throwing things out the window. We want him highly visible because we don't want people to see them when they know it's a road check so they don't do that. We have had people that turn around and try to avoid it, and most of the time those are in violation, usually a significant violation. So at this point, we'll have another vehicle here, and that's also a chase vehicle, so if somebody happens to blow through the stop, say they just keep going, you have to have somebody on right there, because you don't have time to go back and get a vehicle and chase. I mean, you got to be right there. And he's also looking down the road to make sure that nobody's throwing something out. So they usually got spying scope out the window or some eyes on the road. So that's our point of contact right there. The officer on the road will, so at this point, they're diverted down to one lane, slowed down. We have a vehicle there with red and blue lights. Officer stops vehicles, asks simple questions. Do you have any fish or game on board? If the answer is no, then they go down the road. They don't get stopped. They don't get directed in. If they say, yep, we've been pheasant hunting, we got a few pheasants, then they'll get directed in. In this case, we had six different check stations set up. So right at the entrance, we'll have a, we utilize a non-law staff for this, and all they're doing is taking a, distributing those to check stations. So they'll come in, they'll say, go to check station one right there, point to it, they'll drive to it. We usually have a team of two officers. They'll check licenses, check game, generally last about 5 minutes. Sometimes they'll last a little bit longer, but usually that's because they want to visit a little bit, get out and stretch. But if there's no violation, our law enforcement contact is literally 5 minutes. It's check licenses. You might have to pull a cooler out, look inside of it, good to go. Obviously, if there's violations, they do take longer. And then after they got through their check, they'll just go around, back out, and down the road, and pretty painless. We try to detain people as little time as possible and get them down the road. And most road checks are, everyone's going to be a little bit unique just because of the setup, but these general components are going to be at everyone. You're going to have the signage, the vehicles in the same spots, contact officer on the road, check stations. And we want to get the guys off the road into these places so they're safe for the people that are coming and safe for officers.
So this is actually just a few pictures from our Highway 34 road check that we ran last year. And the reason I threw this slide up, we actually partnered with DCI, Department of Criminal Investigation. They have a camera trailer that they were willing to bring out and set it up at the kind of the neck down of our road check and took pictures for us. And yeah, they got an infrared camera on there in the top right, as you can see. So anybody that would throw anything out, we could see that. And they could take video of everything. And if anybody would chase, they were taking plates for us. And they actually counted all the vehicles that came through and took plate numbers, everything with their cameras. So it was just kind of something different we tried. And it was pretty kind of neat to see some of the stuff that they could do with some of their camera equipment that we could utilize. So got a couple more pictures just from a couple other road checks. This is a Officer Stokely, he's down in Vermilion. This was our Highway 44 road check that we ran just a month ago. We do get the question asked a lot, you know, how long do road checks take once I come in? And literally, like this one, you can see there's, you know, several deer in there, and everything was legal and legit, and they were out in just a matter of a couple of minutes. It's once they pull into the road check, it's just no different than a compliance check, and then they're back on the road, unless they want to stay and talk and find out what we see and everything else, and then it takes a little bit longer. But we had seen some unique things on road checks. We ran an I-90 road check. Kind of the most unique thing I've ever heard or seen is we had guys throwing pheasants out the window as he was pulling up and seeing the sign. And I mean, so it does get interesting in a lot of ways too, how people can try to get around a violation, I guess. And again, there's just some more pictures of this last one here, the last one we ran.
And these are just some examples of the signs that we have. So these are Region 2 signs. So they purchase these. They have these in their inventory. So when they need them, they're available. We did the Summit one. We actually rented our signage from Dakota Traffic Solutions. So there's a little bit of expense to that, but it works very well. They're good to work with. Usually when we do road checks, we're at the end of the construction season, so they're available. We'll send somebody down, pick them up, and then set them out. This is our message board that we had at the Summit one. And DOT is very good to work with, so it's one of their big highway message boards. And it just alternates the message, prepare to stop, game check ahead. Prepare to stop, game check ahead. So by the time they get to the cones to slow down, they know what they're doing, they're slowed down. And this is about where we usually have our RCO vehicle placed, is close to that.
So we'll just go through some statistics here of just the last 2 years that we've ran. We actually do road checks for other things as well. Like you can see here, this was actually on paddlefish opener, or the second week of paddlefish, that we conducted a road check down in Yankton. You can see we, with the high water levels, we didn't have a lot of people fishing, or we didn't have a lot of success, but we did have 13 vehicles come through with paddlefish on board. 27 fishermen checked with 5 citations and 4 warnings in that one, which was a little bit alarming to us. We've ran this one several times over the last 15, 20 years, and this one seemed like the violation rate were a little bit higher than normal than we've had in the past. So something that we're going to, you know, definitely look at and see what we can do to make sure guys are compliant a little bit more, whether it's just normal compliance checks or being a little bit more visible out there. For paddlefish, a lot of, mainly our 2 citations are people that they clean their fish before they leave. So there's a size regulation on paddlefish, so you can't clean that until you get home. So we'll see that one. And then the second biggest one is no fishing license. So a lot of people will get their paddlefish tag, but they don't know that they need a fishing license as well. So we'll see that violation's very common with those two. So this was our Highway 44 one that we ran this year, just a month ago. And you can see the comparison. We were a little bit down in vehicles compared to 2016. We ran the exact same one in 2016. But I mean, citations were, you know, approximately 4 citations, or there was 4 citations for 35 vehicles or 67 hunters versus 11 citations for 92 hunters in 2016. So pretty comparable, I'd say. And that's pretty normal when you look at all of our road check statistics kind of in our region. In the southeast part, we're right around that 12 to 15% violation rate with a warning or a citation for the amount of hunters that come through. And these have been, you know, fairly low, actually. So it's been good to see. Warrant hit. So in our last one, we actually had a driver come through with, she actually had like a 3-month-old on her lap that she was trying to feed as she was drumming through our road check, and she had a warrant for arrest as well, and the Highway Patrol actually took that one. So for the most part, we'll always have a trooper either close or there, or the sheriff's office will be there. Yep, they'll take, you know, a lot of the drugs and alcohol and the warrants and stuff rather than us. The non-game violations, they'll take those.
And so this is some example of the Highway 12 road check. So this is one that we ran this year on November 11th. And if you compare those numbers between 2016 and 2019, 2019 is a lot less, and it's only a week apart. But we go back to when we planned these. We're planning these in September. Well, November 11th weekend was extremely bitterly cold. We ended up freezing up, so a lot of our waterfowl hunters had gone already. So it's one of those things you gamble in September when you're making these, and then when you get to it, it's sometimes you miss. This one did have a higher percentage of violations compared to the normal one. You know, look at, we checked probably a third of the hunters we did in 2016, and our citations were very similar to that. So this one was a higher violation, but considerably less hunters. It'd be like a not signed federal stamp, or they may have another violation that was, I think one of them was the Fish and Wildlife Service issued a warning for somebody that had one untagged duck who didn't have the right labeling on it. Usually it's going to be a minor violation. And another thing we run into once in a while is license dates. If somebody's got license dates that are a little bit wrong on their license and they've got a justification for it, they might do a warning for that. So they are able to use discretion.
So are these citations like all class 2
misdemeanors? Most of the small game ones are going to be class 2. If it's a big game violation, like a failure to tag or not having a tag, then that'd be a class 1, but most of them are going to be class 2s.
So if you get a class 2, in addition to the client, what
Yep, those are all going to be on the bond schedule.
Does everybody lose their license for a year?
No. Over limit, if you're over by so many birds, over four birds, you lose your license. A license violation, if you didn't have a license, you'd lose your license for a year. Most of these are going to be a POA fine, and that's it. So some pros and cons. So the pros are, generally when we're planning these, we're doing a high volume of compliance checks. If we have all of our officers out in the field, they might check, depending on the day and what they're looking for, 10 to 20 people in the field a day. A lot of times if you're watching a duck hunter, you might spend a lot of time just watching one group, waiting for them to come out. So you may not get a lot of checks. When we do these road checks, as you can see in that one, we check 211 people in a matter of 6 hours. So you get a high volume of checks, which is good. They're checked at the conclusion of their hunt, so you have better opportunity to detect those overbags, some of those violations that we don't normally see just on a regular compliance check. Opportunity for the compliance with transportation of fish and game regulations, the plumage stuff. When we check guys in the field, the fish are whole and their birds are whole, so they haven't been cleaned yet. So they're doing that once they get back to their motel room, and you just don't encounter those contacts in the field to see clean game. So good opportunity to see that. Can be conducted at peak time frames and high traffic locations, so you can kind of gauge where you want those and try to get a good volume of folks. Safe and controlled environment. So we talked about doing a DOT or divided lanes, so we can get the motorists off the road, we can get our officers off the road, so everybody's in a safe environment when we're doing the compliance checks. And it also serves as a deterrent to violators. We had several people in this last road check that said, yeah, we knew there's going to be a road check here because there's one here every year on this weekend. And the last time we did one there was 2016, and this is the first time we've ever done one on Veterans Day weekend. But people just, they know that they've seen one before, they see it on social media, it's a deterrent, so that's good. We want people to think that they might encounter one of these road checks, so they're going to stay legal. And it is a good opportunity to work with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and other agencies. We always partner with Feds, especially in our area, because we get a lot of waterfall. Typically, if we have a waterfall violation, we just hand it to the Feds because that's kind of their specialty. We work very well with them. We'll have five or six of their refuge officers or agents at our road checks, and it's a great partnership.
So some of the cons you can see, as we've highlighted throughout the deal, but it takes a high number of staff to run one, especially, some of these larger ones. Many hours of planning and logistics. I mean, as I went through in the planning, this is not done overnight. It definitely takes some time. Plan in advance is probably the biggest one, because you do put a lot of time and effort into it. And then, like Craig said, if we get a bad weather storm, or the hot bite goes cold in a hurry or something like that, so that can be definitely some cons to it. And then obviously there's some financial cost to a lot of these as well. When we ran the I-90 road check, the amount of people and the amount of planning and everything that we did in 2015, I mean, it was hundreds of hours, and it cost, a lot of money. So when we run those very large road checks, so there is some cost to that as well. So that's kind of our cons. So kind of with that, I guess, I'd just say thanks for letting us come and give you guys some information. If you have any questions for us, we'd be happy to answer. So,
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Phillips, great report. Enjoyed it. Thank you for the invitation to come along. How would we find out when there was one going to be in?
That's classified. Okay. We'll call you the night before.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So I think I saw in the press release for this one that there was at least one fraud in obtaining a South Dakota license. Is that, you just look at the driver's license, and if it's from Minnesota or whatever and they've got a South Dakota license, or do you do more than that as you're there?
It's all cues, like you said, cues when you're doing the interview. The officer noticed that he had a Minnesota license plate, South Dakota driver's license. It's follow-up questions on that, and it turned out that he had moved to Minnesota, like in February, had transitioned to Minnesota. and still had a South Dakota driver's license and purchased a license in October. So, I mean, he was a resident of Minnesota and wanted to save a few bucks and get a South Dakota license.
So does it ever happen that people are hauled off to jail?
For game violations, not usually. We will have some drugs come through. We have had people go to jail for drugs.
Hmm. Any questions? Thank you, guys, very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
So I think we're at license sale update.